Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about the CW, quote, Arrowverse versus Marvel's Television Cinematic Universe. You're, of course, my co-host, J.D. from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Jesus Christ, my ears.
All right. So, see, this is something we were just talking about, and something J.T. said, interesting, where J.T. said that that how does DC, quote, nail it on TV, but Marvel can't? And I don't think DC nails it as much as they have such a low television budget for these shows that even like the viewership they got is still considered a win.
Okay, bear in mind, folks, I said finger quotes before knocking it out of the park in that conversation. They just tend to have greater success with their television efforts than Marvel does with theirs, and then vice versa. You know, the Marvel movies are knocking it out of the park.
Well, the biggest thing I have to say about that, and I really need to stop saying the biggest thing because I've been listening to myself, and that is a thing I do that I need to fix. But
the biggest thing? Is that the biggest thing you do?
Probably. The one thing we have to keep in mind with the DC CW shows is their special effects budget is laughably low.
It's a television series, Ben. They don't get a lot of money for special effects.
There are ways to work around that, and they don't. They could choose their battles with certain shots. A great example of this is I was watching an episode of The Flash a couple years ago where The Flash goes to, I think, Earth 2 to save their universe's Harry Wells from Gorilla City. And he's fighting Sullivan in the arena. And there's this scene where you have the actor, the Flash actor, whatever the hell his name is, I forgot.
Grant Gustin.
And all of a sudden it cuts from Grant Gustin standing there, you know, fighting Sullivan, and then all of a sudden, like, a really close-up shot of a drop of blood, and you have him all of a sudden limbo leaning back, but it's not him. It is a CG model that looks like it was rendered on a PS2.
And then, Sorry, continue.
And they could have chose to not do that shot. They could have chose to do lots of, like, weird, blurry, dark CGI model in the foreground, really close to the camera, attacking the Flash, and a really clear Flash real-life actor reacting and moving around from it in like the focus area, and get a much better effect versus shots like that. And again, they know what their budget is, and they still went for it. And
in the 99th episode, Itchy and Scratchy.
Okay.
Itchy clearly strikes two different ribs, or the same rib, producing two different sounds. Am I supposed to believe this is some kind of magic xylophone? I sure hope somebody got fired for that mistake.
Okay, fine.
I get what you're saying, Ben. But that's the thing with any show with a special effects budget, like, they're not always going to score a home run. It's just, I stand by what I said. The Arrowverse shows, although the Greg Berlanti, who's like the head producer and that stuff, said that WB's also said that you're supposed to call it the Berlantiverse now because, well, it's a bit of a misnomer because the Arrow isn't in production anymore, so we can't really call it the Arrow. And I refer you to Red's comment about the Itchy and Scratchy thing, because, dear God, I almost went down that road. I'm just saying, overall, combination of everything, acting, writing, production-wise, DC and their current lineup of CW shows, and the two or three that are going to be on HBO Max, including Titans, which I can't believe that's getting a third season, have had greater success, comparatively speaking, than a lot of Marvel television programs. The animation Marvel versus DC argument is an entire episode in and of itself. so I'm not going to bring those up. And as we were talking before about, you know, the Netflix series, you know, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. And you know, we have talked about those series before. I think we all agree Daredevil was the best out of those. Luke Cage had a lot of potential, although that was squandered in season two. Iron Fist.
Iron Fist wasn't even the fucking Iron Fist show. It was stupid fucking, who owns the company?
Yeah.
There, female there, lawyer.
Yeah, there was a whole...
fighting for her clients.
Yeah. There was more Danny Rand than there was Iron Fist.
That's not that, even necessarily a problem that it was Danny Rand heavy in the beginning. The problem was they were trying to set up three different shows at the beginning where Danny tries to reclaim his company, but no one believes he is who he says he is, so he's basically set to be a destitute person in the homeless, and now he's learning the plight of the homeless. Now he's being thrown into an insane asylum, and he's having to rebuild, and then instantly Fixed and Forgiven. Now he's trying to run a company. It's like rapid fires goes through all these plots without stopping to take a breath and deciding what direction the show is. It's like the writers of that show had ADD.
Yeah. Versus the comic history, you know, Danny, like from what I recall reading the original Iron Fist series from the 70s, like before it was Power Man and Iron Fist, like, it was always going on in the background of the question of whether or not he is Danny Rand, he has any right to this company. And, you know, he's been missing for 10 years. And they didn't resolve that until sometime during Power Man and Iron Fist's run. And even then, it wasn't a huge thing until, you know, he died in Power Man, Iron Fist, and then he was found to have been replaced. The one that died was found to be a copy created by the plant people that were the main antagonists of the Empire storyline that Marvel just concluded, proving that no good idea is ever used properly or a bad idea goes unpunished. But yeah, no, the Iron Fist series, I will say the second season, they course corrected a bit. You got more of the mythology, you know, the Iron Fist. You have Davos coming to seek his revenge and trying to claim the Iron Fist as his own. I think my biggest argument against Iron Fist overall, the two seasons, is the same argument, the problem I have with the Nicolas Cage, the first Nicolas Cage Ghost Rider movie, and it's too clean. It's too bright. It's when Iron Fist came out, and I think you guys can agree with me on this point, it was a success because, you know, they were trying to cash in on the kung fu explosion of the movies at the time, and it had that kind of pulp novel kind of, it had that certain something, that snap that caught people's attention, and they didn't have anything like that in the Iron Fist series, which is a huge reason why it sucked. You know, they have little moments like in Iron Fist season two with Danny and Luke. There's the little bits in the Defenders crossover miniseries that you see that little bit of a diamond in the rough quality, but they never capitalized on that, or at least capitalized on the way that I feel they should have. And then you have, I mean, what did you guys, watch any of the Jessica Jones aside from the first season?
The first season ended.
Couldn't stomach the first season.
Yeah. Like how we talked about how the first season of Iron Fist had a problem with almost schizophrenic writing of jumping from plot point to plot point, never settling on one central plot. Jessica Jones is the exact opposite in the fact that it was centered entirely on her trauma and almost maddeningly on only her trauma. And it got really uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, sorry, you go, Red.
I remember when we didn't do an entire Jessica Jones commentary, but we did an episode featuring Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, I think, at the same time.
Yes.
And I admitted on that episode, I watched like the first three episodes and I was like, fuck this. I'm tired of, I was abused and blah, 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 and I'm going to drinky and blah, blah. It's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
And then you go to Defenders, nothing's changed. So what, there's no character growth. What the fuck was the point of the first season then?
Yeah, they retreated to focusing on she's got trauma and she drinks a lot.
Yes.
Sorry, that's my tablet dying on me. They had some growth throughout the series, and it wasn't like by the end of it she had gotten over her trauma. I mean, she'd gotten over a huge piece of trauma by, you know, killing Kilgrave, and she has to deal with that going forward. And I don't think the story ended there, but I think that version of Jessica Jones ended there, because from what I never watched the second or the third seasons, and that's not because I thought the show outright sucked and I wasn't going to waste my time. I just watch way too much television to begin with. But from what I understand, in the second season, it focused on the company that, you know, was responsible for the toxic chemicals that gave Jessica her powers and killed her parents in that accident. And the third season ended with her friend Trish becoming the Netflix version of Hellcat and killing a guy, and, you know, Jessica all of a sudden becoming the responsible one, making her, you know, pay for her crimes. And the Black Power Ranger from RPM went from being a crackhead in the first season to being the TV version of Jerry Hogarth from the comics, right-hand man or something. And it's not that it was a woman focusing on a woman character. I would have glad. It's not that. I've seen a lot of people, not just us, but other people I've seen online, just perusing the forums and not really commenting. These, it's like, oh, you didn't like that show because it's featured a woman. It's no, it's just you didn't have that hook that people wanted to get into it.
For me, the show was uncomfortable. It just was uncomfortable. It was not like. Like Rudd said, there's no character growth at all. There's no sense of this character moving forward or moving backward. It's like the character of Jessica Jones is stuck in, I was traumatized and I drink. I'm drunky McDruck face, and that's all it is. Oh, we need a shot to remind you, like every 20 minutes. Oh, she's pouring some vodka in a sippy cup. Great. Now we remember she's a drunk. Yeah, it's written like a sitcom writer trying to write a drama.
Yeah, and also there, again, concentrating on that, it's not like she wasn't a drunk or had drinking problems in the comics, but say what you will about Bendis, and we have spoken our piece on Bendis before. One of the things he got right in that original Alias series was that the noir qualities of Jones as a detective. You know, she smokes a lot, she drinks a lot, they got that narration. Like, it's a fanboy's take on those elements, but I think he got that right. And the writers of this series just concentrated on one or two of those things and not the whole, you know, concentrate on the parts, not the whole of the parts, the sum of the parts, I should say. And then you got Luke Cage, which I really liked that first season. That first season I thought was very well done. I love the Mike Coulter is, honestly, outside of Charlie Cox, Mike Coulter was the best actor they had in any of these Netflix series in the lead role. You had guys like Scott Glenn who played Stick, and well, Scott Glenn is an incredible actor, and well, his Stick kicked ass.
When it comes to Luke Cage, the first half of the season was good.
Yes.
Then the main antagonist, which they should have fucking kept alive, got killed off. Then it became boring.
And then they had invented a new antagonist for the second half.
Well, that is an antagonist from the comics. But the original comic.
Invent, sorry? For the invent as mean they have to insert him into the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely, it's a forced injection because the comic book origin is Cottonmouth was responsible for the frame-up that sent Luke Cage, or Carl Lucas, which is his real name, to Seagate, and which led to him volunteering for that experiment that turned him into the man that he is today. And I would have gladly taken that. Like, I have no problem with them bringing in Diamondback in the end, although Mahershala Ali, hey, I said it right, absolutely killed it as Cottonmouth, and he should have made it, you know, like first episode of season two and have him then have him taken out by Diamondback, but then you wouldn't have had Bushmaster.
Well, as I was saying, it wasn't so much the guy who was playing Luke Cage. He did a good job, but it was the actors around him that really made the show.
Yes.
Like, they were really fucking good. And when you got, like, especially the guy who played Cottonmouth, like you said, the dude was fucking killing it. And I don't know why, as a writer, would, if you saw that somebody was killing it, why would you kill that character off?
I put the blame on Marvel corporate or Marvel editorial on that, because Diamondback was like the big bad for Luke Cage in the comics, and he needs to be the Cottonmouth, because Cottonmouth in the comics, and I haven't read a lot of the original Luke Cage run, the only Cottonmouth that I'm familiar with in the comics is a member of the Serpent Society. The Serpent Society is almost uniquely a Captain America villain clique. But they came up with this great hook for the idea of Cottonmouth. I mean, you know, having his teeth ripped out as a kid and having his mouth packed with cotton like that. And but yeah, Mahershala Ali, Alfre Woodard as Black Mariah was great. Jeez.
She was terrible. She was a bit part of anything, and they really shouldn't have brought her up to the front. She worked better as a character in the background.
Yeah. I mean, I loved what she did, but I think what you're saying.
I think the big problem with the Netflix series is the first season of Daredevil was overall a great amount of television, all compacted into one season. It worked good. The second season, some missteps here and there, but overall wasn't too bad. But third season, oh my God. But they're trying to capture lightning in a bottle with these other series. Like, we want to do Luke Cage. Okay, great. We, you know, the whole idea of having a guy at the bottom bringing himself back up, interesting, good. The actor, like most of the actors, phenomenal talent. Me, lead actor, great talent. First half, like Red said, phenomenal. Then they killed off the main villain, brought in a villain in the second half that we had no connection to at the beginning, and basically ended with a fizzle. You know, Jessica Jones, we talked about how just so stuck in trauma. The whole theme is trauma. Luke Cage, schizophrenic writing. Punisher is another one that we didn't mention yet.
I'll admit, I enjoyed Punisher. And that's coming from me. I fucking hate Punisher in the comics. But I enjoy, like, the way they portrayed him as a guy who was just trying to get over losing his fucking, like, losing his family. I got that. And that really stuck to me. And that's not something they do in the comics. In the comics, he's just this fucking psycho who just wants to kill everybody, every fucking bad guy that exists.
Yeah, it depends on who's writing him.
Yeah, it started with him losing his family, and somewhere along the road, they kind of lost that. And I enjoyed, it would seem to me more of a deeper character in the series. Now, I'm not going to say the series is fucking perfect. Like, it had its mistakes and it had its boring episodes. Like, there's definitely, like, three episodes that were fucking filler in that series.
Yeah.
There were some interesting ideas with Microchip and how Frank was sort of becoming a surrogate father figure to the to that family.
Yeah.
And when at first he was just trying to help Microchip, and then later he started finding himself like becoming comfortable with it. And it was sort of a weird dynamic, weird but interesting dynamic between him, Microchip, and his and Microchip's family. Of, you know, Microchip's the one who brought him into this, and now he's sort of being like watching Frank sort of enjoying being part of his own family that he can't be a part of right now. And it's like it's there were some ideas there that were good, and the execution was even partly good.
Yeah, I would say my favorite thing, John Bernthal, I thought played a great Punisher.
I
That,
when
sorry,
he
Red.
played when he played Punisher in Daredevil, he pissed me off. I couldn't stand him because he had this weird twitch that he did in Walking Dead. Like when his character's angry, he would look side to side and like shake his head, and it was like the dumbest fucking tick ever. And I remember saying that when we were doing the Daredevil review, season two of Daredevil, and for some fucking reason, I don't know if Marvel heard us or something, but he stopped fucking doing it in the Punisher.
Yeah, I noticed that. I never really clicked before. But what I liked about Bernthal's performance is you go through the origin of the Punisher. You know, he's tra as they explained in Daredevil, he's kind of trapped in that flight or flight response because of his physical trauma, never mind the emotional trauma. And he goes off at the end of that. You know, he takes out one of the last hand ninjas. You know, see around Red. Goes off. We see in the beginning of that second season, he gets the rest of the guys that are involved in this, you know, conspiracy. And now, what does he do with himself? You see him how he's just breaking that wall down in the construction site until he's brought back into it. And the best part, my favorite piece of his acting, was in the final shot of the first series, where he's gone to the support group and he's actively participating instead of just standing in the background. And saying, you know, he doesn't know what he's more, you know, he's scared of the silence. And they actually took the idea of this trauma, this soldier experienced this trauma and has acted to try and deal with this trauma in like the most horrible way possible, some would say, with all this killing. And going into season two, like he's trying not to act on that, but he will defend himself. Sir, the second Punisher season, dear Christ. It's like it's the Punisher, it's Pino, Punisher in name only. Because they did everything they possibly could to keep him from like, okay, I don't re I like the idea of him having that roar, that yell when he kills somebody like that. It's a cheesy sort of thing and I enjoy that, but I don't know. What did you guys think of the second season? Because that it's so there weren't nearly enough hits to make me forgive any of the misses.
I never watched the second season.
Same here.
My
Okay.
Netflix subscription like
Lapped.
stopped, like collapsed, so I was like, fuck. I didn't even know there was a second season.
Okay, I won't go into too much detail. I will say I don't really recall what I know they're adapting some story from the comics. I don't remember which one it was exactly. And it ends with him fully becoming the Punisher, you know, setting gangs up and all and going in like just one-handing assault rifles in both hands and mowing these mofos down. But you would do as well just to watch that first season and forget the second one exists. And we've already said our piece on Daredevil. I mean, a lot of the other Marvel shows, we talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that series for what it was. That, never mind, you know, we've argued about whether it's connected or not to the cinematic universe. I say it is. You guys say it isn't.
Well, the
I
creator
like,
said it isn't, so.
yeah, well, Joss Whedon's opinion doesn't really count because he didn't work on the show. He only worked on the Avengers movie, so nah. My point is, I liked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it reminded me of growing up in the 90s and the early 2000s with those syndicated sci-fi action adventure fantasy shows that were on the weekends, you know, like the Beastmaster, Viper, and all that sort of stuff.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had one purpose, and it should have been canceled after it did its purpose. It was there to advertise Captain America's Civil War. That's all it was. Then it went off the fucking rails after it lost its purpose.
Yeah.
Mr. Hyde shows up, and blah, 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 and suddenly we're fighting fucking robots from the future, and Kree, and even though they look nothing like they do in the fucking movies, because they never established what they look like in the movies. And
wow, suddenly I didn't think you were going to bring
suddenly we can travel. Suddenly we can travel through the fucking goddamn quantum realm for no fucking reason, even though Hank Pym has never informed somebody that it fucking exists.
And it's explained that without someone as smart as, say, Tony Stark building a way to go through it, you're going to get lost indefinitely, and unless you're lucky and just happen to fall through a hole in it back into reality.
It's actually explained pretty well in that last season when they get to the end of how the time skipping works, and that's all I'm going to say about that, because we'll just end up shouting at each other. I like the series. The characters they introduced, you know, they brought back Phil Coulson. We brought, you know, Ming-Na Wen. What's that?
Multiple times.
Yeah. It's Marvel. Like, who stays dead anymore? You know,
he was dead. Because they brought him back as an alternative version from another dimension. And then he was a fucking EMH.
LMD.
Whatever.
Well, he was physically there, Red. He wasn't a hologram. No, like they brought the character back. They used it to introduce the general populace to the ideas of magic and aliens in the Marvel Universe, because that would take too long and too many movies to do it just in the cinematic universe.
Without watching those movies, I would totally, watching those TV shows, I would have never understood Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah, I forgot the second purpose why it existed. It was to push that Inhumans are cool, guys. We swear.
They're totally like mutants, except not.
Okay, that wasn't the express person, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's fucking Ike Perlmutter being a bitch about 20th Century Fox making money off of X-Men. Let's be honest. They didn't do it any better in the show. And just say, I enjoyed the show. A lot of people enjoyed the show. And not everybody has the same opinion. That's what makes life great. I think we can agree we like the Agent Carter series, at least the first season.
It was okay. It was not something
the second season?
It's not something I rushed to watch. I think the actress is a great actress. I think a lot of the actors that were supporting were great actors, but it never was a, oh my God, I need to catch up on this show.
Okay. And Rich.
I don't like Agent Carter for one reason.
Okay.
It's because she was doing that show that she turned down Doctor Who.
That's fair. And the only good thing to come out of the Inhuman series was seeing a CGI Lockjaw on screen, and everybody loves Lockjaw. Do not fight me on this, Red.
He looked like a disgusting fucking slug. Fucking monster thing. He didn't look
cute. You're a fucking monster slug.
He's a monster slug.
Well, the only good reason, honestly, I'm not going to lie, the only reason I watched Inhumans was to see a CGI Lockjaw. I couldn't have given less of a fuck about the Inhumans. I like Jack Kirby in the comic book Inhumans. Well, I didn't want this series at all. Marvel assumed I wanted it.
It's okay to admit the Inhumans fucking suck.
I do admit it sucked, except for Lockjaw.
Don't you want to see the amazing and dynamic character Black Bolt?
If he speaks, he can destroy the world. Isn't that awesome?
That's in the comics, too.
I know it's in the comics.
He's still fucking lame in the comics.
You know what? They did Black Bolt a hell of a lot better in the TV series. Or they did him more justice in the TV series than they did Medusa. Medusa used her hair for about 5 minutes in the first episode, and then she got shaved fucking bald.
Well, fucking CGI costs money.
Yeah, and they spent most of that money on Lockjaw. Next series.
And he's still looking like a disgusting fucking slug thing.
Okay, I don't know. I never looked at these shows, but did you guys look at The Cloak and Dagger, The Runaways?
No.
I watched the first season of The Runaways, and it was just a remake of the comic. It was nothing special.
All right.
So let's talk about the DC side of things. The Arrowverse, I would rather call it the DCCW-verse, because I think it gives too much importance to Green Arrow, which I think is
I don't think
Diet
it's
Batman.
Important. Well, yeah, and that's because the DC's like, we don't want them to use Batman on TV because that will make them confused about the movies. I think Arrowverse is a perfectly fine name. It's simple. And it's one word. You know, it's like Madonna. That's it. That's the Arrowverse. Berlantiverse, I just think that's...
Who the fuck is Berlanti?
Greg Berlanti is one of the main producers on all of the CW series. And I just think it's too much of an ego stroke to be calling it Berlantiverse. CW show started with Arrow. It's the Arrowverse to me. It's when people tell you you got to call it the Kelvin timeline and not the Abrams verse when talking about the new Star Trek movies. But I digress.
Berlanti can take his long ass name and turn that son of a bitch sideways and shove it straight up his ass.
Not even straight up, real nice.
No.
Okay.
He doesn't deserve that kindness, Red.
So
no.
Okay.
So what I was saying is Green Arrow, the show that started it all there, I feel like people made a big deal about that actor because they're like, they said something like he really was doing like this workout regimen where he was doing like these really weird kind of pull-ups.
Salmon ladder.
Yeah, like he was really doing salmon ladder. He's fucking badass. What's the name of the they did adapt a lot of ideas from material, like the whole idea that Oliver Queen got stranded on an island and had to learn archery to survive on this island. These are all things that are in the comics, but... Go ahead.
The whole thing about Oliver Queen being stuck on the island is he was supposed to be like a spoiled rich boy.
Yes.
And learning to survive on the island, him not knowing anything how to survive and teaching himself,
yes,
renews his faith in humanity.
Yes.
If he can do it, if he can make himself better, everybody else can make themselves better. That's what Green Arrow is all about.
Yes.
But what they fucking did, and 9 fucking years of him globetrotting the fucking world, even though he's supposed to be stuck on a fucking island, is fucking retarded.
Yeah. So the biggest issue I have with, the main problems that Green Arrow or Arrow had in the first seasons is they tried to make Oliver Queen too much of a badass, too much of a brooding guy. They never really got out of that either throughout the show. There was always this whole "I'm Batman light, just one calorie, not Batman enough."
They lessened never, that as time went on.
They never
to be fair.
Embraced they, the. Go ahead.
They made a joke about that. Like when they'll go to Gotham, he's like, he's just copying me. I did it first.
It's a joke. I mean, honestly, that the first 2-3 years before, because he was just the Hood. They refer to him in the show as the Hood for like the first 2 or 3 seasons. Then he becomes, you know, the Arrow and then Green Arrow. But specifically those first couple of years, I think a lot of the writers, they read Mike Grell did that
Longbow Hunters?
The Longbow Hunters, where, you know, Green Arrow hadn't had his own title for a number of years in the late 80s, you know, thanks to Frank Miller. Thumbs up, Frank, you did us a solid. Everyone was rebooting a lot of street level heroes like that in DC as these grim and gritty, you know, Avengers of Evil. And you know, this is a time where you meet like Eddie Friars, this ex CIA agent, and Black Canary got raped and lost her sonic scream powers for years until she started dating Ra's al Ghul and took a dip in a Lazarus pit. And they just hung on this grim, dark version of Green Arrow. And they never let go of that. I mean, like I said, later on, they did slacken the whole brooding thing and, you know, they lightened it up. They didn't remove it completely, but it became less prevalent.
Superman, that papoose is not yours.
Yeah, but I mean, I was talking with my roommate earlier today. We were talking about that, how, you know, Green Arrow was Batman because that confusion. The execs didn't think us ordinary people would be able to distinguish between a movie version of Batman and a TV version of Batman because, oh, that's too much info all at once. And then you have, conversely, before Supergirl showed up, Barry on the Flash was that lighter counterpoint. He was, you know, kind of the Superman equivalent till we got Superman, you know, to balance out the light with the dark and all that. And Arrow was that gateway show for all this stuff. I mean, it proved you could do DC. They do tend to leave all the CW shows lean heavily on the look at the pretty people and their problems sort of Megillah, because it's the CW. If they don't have a pretty person as the lead actor, the show won't succeed.
I'm so handsome and alone. I'm going to brood.
You know what, say what you, I love Stephen Amell as Green Arrow. I love him in real life with all the, like, the charity work he does and all that. He's a solid dude. The one thing I never bought in Green Arrow is Oliver and Felicity. At what point did they even begin to develop that they had feelings for each other?
She was best girl ever.
Best girl ever until the last episodes of season two, and then he declares, I love her. At what point have you two even gone on a fucking date?
They just pushed her really hard. Like, someone in the writing room really, really, like, either was hot for that actress or really loved the character they were writing. So they just kept on pushing her more and more and more to where she was not only just someone in Oliver's circle that would happen to be smart. No, she's now all of a sudden tech support. She's now all of a sudden emotionally stable and always on top of things. It's like, It reminds me of fucking what's her name that Dan Slott had in his Spider-Man run. You know who I'm talking about, the girl that's based off of Quesada's daughter.
Carly Cooper.
Yeah, where all of a sudden she's perfect and everyone loves her, and even MJ's like, this girl's perfect for Peter.
Yeah, writer created a character that fits well with the hero. Shock.
Ben's trying to say that they forced it.
Oh, yeah, no. I don't think they forced Carly Cooper, but they definitely forced Felicity. They built the character up over time, and eventually they got together. It happens.
Felicity was a square peg trying to be put into a round hole, and they did not give up. They got a fucking sledgehammer to put that fucking sucker in there.
They built the pegboard while they're doing it, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, the my biggest problem with Felicity is a character. Like, I don't hate her as a character, but in the show as a character, she forever bitching about when somebody goes rogue or does something without the team backing them up. But then she does the same thing, and oh my god, she's the Carol Danvers of the CW verse.
Oh my, that's not. Come on,
that's a bit much.
She has never once given her comeuppance for some of the bullshit she pulled in the entire history of Arrow.
I'm not saying you're wrong, JT. I'm just saying that comparing her to Carol, come on, that's a little harsh.
That's below the belt.
Okay, who's it harsh towards, Felicity or Carol?
Felicity. Like, she's a bad character. Don't get me wrong, but you have to realize, like, for the first couple times she showed up, she wasn't terrible yet. It was only where she went from sort of interesting character to full-on love interest and full-on best girl ever that she evolved from interesting character that we kind of sort of liked to, oh my god, get it away, kill it with fire. Carol didn't even get that much.
I stand by what I said.
I believe, like, Felicity had her fans, and I know that for sure. Like, a lot of the CW people who are always talking about the show and shit like that, they love Felicity. And she started out as a good character. I'm going to give her that. And Carol never started out as a good character. But they went way too far with her. Like, she went, as Ben said, she just evolved and got worse, and she turned into a big fucking Akira baby that started to swallow up everything.
Akira baby.
Like, She started out as the quirky girl that helped Oliver out with computer shit. Then she turned into fucking I'm the new Oracle. And then she turned into I'm the fucking team leader. You're all fucking pieces of shit. And I'm the only fucking person who has their head on their shoulders. Just enough, Lizard.
Okay. She's the moral judge of everything that everyone does wrong.
Yeah. Two things. One, she, aside from her getting really weepy for a couple episodes where she redirected a nuke to take out another city, which I believe it was Monument Point, which was a title or a city that was featured in the JSA, their Justice Society of America title, just prior to New 52, and how you made earlier about the Batman I Did It First joke, Red. Felicity has her own version of that. She's like, oh, I need a, like, before they started calling her Overwatch, she's like, oh, I need a cool code name. How about Oracle? And Oliver's like, it's taken.
Yeah.
So Arrow.
I wish it was taken, because I would have loved to see Barbara in that fucking, in the Batwoman.
Yeah, I would have loved to see Dina Meyer play Barbara again.
The biggest, okay. The problem with that line of it's taken is the implication is bigger than the line itself. The line is a throwaway, that's cutesy, little nod and wink to the fan. And the fan immediately takes it as, Oracle, it's taken. Batman confirmed!
Well, I don't think they ever, it's not.
No, I'm saying the fans do that. The fans do that. It's sort of like when the Raimi Spider-Man films in Spider-Man 2, we need a good name for this guy named Octavius. Turns himself into a giant mechanical octopus. What do we call him? Doctor Strange? That's good, but taken.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. And again, it goes back to we don't want to confuse people with the TV Batman ethos. Because, I mean, the first season, you bring in Huntress, who is never been a Green Arrow character. The closest she's come to Green Arrow is when she and Black Canary were part of the Birds of Prey in the comics. They have an episode in the first season where Oliver has to go rescue somebody in Bloodhaven. Like, throughout the series, they keep peppering in all these Gotham references until they finally go to Gotham, but it's not Batman, it's Batwoman, and we've already talked about that.
But in another episode. Is, Green Arrow's fucking enemy list, his rogues gallery, they fucking suck.
Most of them do.
Yeah, so they were pulling out Batman villains and Flash villains. It got so annoying to the point they actually had to have the Flash fucking show up because they had most of his rogues gallery fucking show up.
Yes. Well, I mean, backdoor pilot there. And, you know, that, I remember reading an interview with Stephen Amell talking around that time. They were supposed to have like a full on backdoor pilot episode in that season of Arrow, where it would have been Oliver going to Central City and them setting up, you know, the Flash series. And then they would have had the Flash season one, but then they have that all in that first episode like that. And, you know, moving over to the, I mean, there's so many great character actors in Arrow. Like Paul Blackthorne, TV's Harry Dresden as Quentin Lance, easily one of my favorite side characters in the series. I can't remember the first name.
It's only because the actor is a good fucking actor.
Well, that's what I mean. And I can't remember the first name, but what's his name? Bennett that played Deathstroke in the show.
He was terrible.
Eh.
Good day, mate. I'm Deathstroke. How's it go? Let's put a shrimp on the Bobby.
Okay, it's not quite that direct. But where's like some other like actors, characters, whatever on Arrow before we move to Flash there?
I can't really think of any that I really like. Most of the characters were singular notes. The other Lances I really didn't think were that great. The villains, like Red said, were lacking. Like you had Merlin.
The guy who plays Merlin is fucking awesome.
He's a great actor, but
John Barrowman.
But after Merlin became Ra's al Ghul, all of a sudden it was just he was hammy. All of a sudden super hammy, like full Shatner.
That's Spellman. He's always full Shatner.
No, when Merlin first showed up, he was a lot more reserved.
I was about to address that. It was obviously the director's like, John, take it down a notch, please.
Let's do less is more. Yeah. I did like Colin Donnell's, the guy who played Tommy Merlin, his son, Oliver's best friend. I like him as an actor. He was only there for like the first season and then sporadic guest spots here and there. I did like him. Willa Holland, who played Thea. I think she got better as the show went on.
I have huge dentures in my teeth, and this is how I talk.
I mean, yeah, I think she... Sorry, you go right.
It was obvious she had fake teeth. I could see her teeth behind her fucking fake teeth.
I think she had surgery to get anime eyes, honestly.
I have big teeth for some reason. I talk like the Mask.
Yeah.
I talk like Jim Carrey in a Mask.
Smoking!
I will say, outside of all them, I think one of my favorite actors is the guy who played John Diggle, David Ramsey. Sorry, John Diggle Stewart, as they established in the last season.
That was such an ass pull.
That was just because they made a crack when they had the 90s fucking John, Batman. Where's your ring? Yeah, when they had the 90s Flash show up.
Yeah, that's the problem like I said earlier, with the whole... Here's a nice little nod and wink to the fan. Oh my God. Instantly 100% confirmed. And then the show writers were like, oh, guess we got to 100% confirm it now.
I fail to see why that's a bad thing. They didn't do that until like the last season. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's bad. We're just poking fun at it.
It's bad. You're poking fun, Red.
No, I'm poking fun at it. Jesus.
Hey, The Flash.
The Flash had some great fucking moments. Like, the end of the 90s Flash, when he dies there, to me, that was the perfect ending.
Yeah. The end of Crisis.
Yeah.
That's a classic Crisis moment, dude. How they tease that in Elseworlds, I was like, no. First of all, if anyone dies in a crisis such as that, it should just be the Flash. You do not share the spotlight with Kara Zor-El. I'm sorry. As much as I love Melissa Benoist as Supergirl.
Well, she does die in the crisis.
Yes. So let's really talk about the Flash. I think that most of the first cast was pretty good. I enjoyed lots of the characters. I think the guy who played Wells/Zoom really had a sinister edge in the first season. I also can't help but feel that that after the first season, the writing room went, okay, let's do more of the same. All right, who's the next villain? Let's make another speedster. Okay, great. Let's bring back the actor for Harrison Wells. But isn't he dead? Well, let's just bring another Harrison Wells. And
we're gonna promise this season, it's not gonna be a speedster villain. But guess what? It's a speedster villain.
Yes.
Yeah, that took them to season 4 to get off that rail.
They didn't really get off.
They didn't get off. It was like fucking half season later. It's like, guess what? It's actually Barry's clone the whole time.
Like, the only time they
season
really got...
Season 4 was the Thinker.
They partially got off on the Thinker. I think, if I remember correctly, there was still a speedster villain in that Thinker season.
No, there wasn't.
Are you sure?
I watched every... Yeah, the Thinker was the main villain in Season 4. Savitar, the Barry time remnant clone thing, was the villain in Season 3. And season 5, I'm just going to take a look here because I forget.
Godspeed?
No, Godspeed showed up in the 6th season, and they haven't definitively had someone be Godspeed. Like, you have a future episode in season 5 where he's defeated, and the Godspeeds that showed up in season 6 were essentially brainwashed minions of some unknown villain that keeps sending Godspeed back in time to futz with Team Flash. I know season six. Yeah, from the future.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be Zoom.
Well, probably, but the main villain in season five was Cicada, a TV version of the villain Cicada.
And then Zoom.
At some for a bit, yes, but he wasn't the main villain. Like
technically, he was.
He showed up.
He was him the whole time, Austin.
Yes.
Implication is not proof.
No, he said it. He said when you came back to me at that time 5 years ago, I revealed that you needed me to do this thing for you for Cicada. I set all this up.
Okay, fine.
He literally the said main that. Villain.
And it's not like they're never not going to use a speedster villain. I honestly don't understand why anyone is surprised or upset by that. It's the Flash. What does he do? He runs fast. Any of his villains as fast as the Flash? Yes.
You don't need a speedster villain.
I'm not saying you need. It's just it's
a crutch.
Why? Yeah, and maybe one comic book based TV show that isn't almost entirely crutches.
It's because one person does it doesn't justify other people doing it.
And also, I'd like to point out that was every Green Arrow villain an Archer?
Not every Flash villain is a speedster.
Let's fight with our bows, but not shoot arrows at each other.
Yeah, they start doing these fucking kayaking motions. It looks fucking awful. Anyways, The Flash, I think, again, I thought the first season was actually not spectacular, but it was competent. It was good. There were moments I enjoyed. The future seasons had some moments I enjoyed. The Flash sort of became like the crossover horror of the CW-DC shows.
For me, The Flash stopped making sense. Like, fucking writing went all over the place. And me, when I was watching, I'm like, I'm trying to make sense of this. There's got to be some kind of secret conspiracy happening on. I believe in the writers. I believe they're doing something. No, they're not. It's exactly what you're fucking showing us. Because for the longest time, I believed that they were doing the return of Barry Allen, and Barry Allen was actually still stuck in the Speed Force, and we're getting Eddie Thorne this whole fucking time. No, it's actually Barry. Then why was he writing in the 30th century fucking...
Weird blitz?
Weird in the 30th century fucking universal speech. I don't know. We forgot about that. Don't worry about it.
I think that was a case of one writer in the writer's room had an idea, was able to sneak it in, and then everyone was like, no, we're going to change this.
They kind of explained it because they're like, oh, it comes from the Speed Force. Okay. Like somebody who's read Legion, who knows that those symbols actually come from the 30th century. And...
It's called Interlac, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wouldn't go so far as to call it a whore, Ben. I feel that is a little too much. But yeah, they use the Flash because one of my favorite things that they introduced in the Flash, you know, primarily in the second season was, you know, the multiverse, you know, and that's a gateway to any number of classic crossovers in the comic book. So it's not like it's a bad thing. The idea of taking Tom Cavanaugh, who is an accomplished actor and he can do pretty much everything, you know, comedy, drama and all that, to bring him back season after season in a new multiversal role as Harrison Wells, you know, Harry Wells in the second season, and then what was the French one? Sherlock Wells. I was like, dear God, I wanted to beat him with a lead pipe. I like Nash Wells in this last season. HR was the one with the drumsticks that was like a bit of a Pollyanna, just relentlessly upbeat and happy.
Yes. Uh-huh. And also not that... Not super intelligent.
No, he's smart enough to become a novelist. Honestly, my favorite member of the cast, aside from Grant Gustin as Barry Allen, is my boy from Law and Order, Jesse L. Martin, as P- Papa Joe West.
He's a good actor, but I felt so sorry for his fucking character. All his character did was fucking suffer every fucking season.
And constantly ask, where's Barry? We need Barry here. Oh my god, I'm about to get killed. Barry, get here. I'm your adopted dad.
Wow, Ben's oversimplifying the writing of every season in 3 seconds. I'm amazed.
Red, what did I say that wasn't true?
I never said it wasn't true. I'm just saying it's an oversimplification. He does a lot more than that.
He also says, where's Iris?
Oh, dear God, Iris. But Candace Patton, I think, I haven't seen anything else she's been in, but I think she's a decent actress from what I've seen in The Flash. So I blame her, but I mostly blame the writers for making Iris West Allen one of the most annoying. This woman out Felicity's Felicity.
I wouldn't say that.
I would.
Am I wrong?
She definitely has problems, especially in the latter seasons. I think after the wedding, definitely they kicked her up to 11. But before then, there were issues with her character. Definitely issues with her character, but they weren't as prominent. She definitely played the Denzel distress card, or the writers did for her, often. But I think the point of no return for Iris was definitely the wedding, because after the wedding, oh my god.
Just overly concerned of every move that Barry made, and to the point where she got fired from her job at the... Central City Citizen, I think is the name of the newspaper she worked at, and just became like leader of Team Flash. And it's not like she's like, here, go do this in a like a commanding way. She's like, she bitches at somebody until they go and do it. How Cisco with his vibe powers didn't beam her into the dimension between dimensions is, well, beyond me.
Let's talk about Cisco, Mr. I'm quirky and I'm such a geek and blah, blah, blah. Then one season they're going to make me super dark and I'm angry at Barry because somehow he killed my brother, even though in my reality he was dead all along, and having these weird fucking feelings would make no fucking sense for any human being. But I'm still going to be angry at Barry. Then the fans are going to complain that I'm not nerdish and I'm not likable anymore. So they're going to make me quirky and likable again.
Yeah.
I did think the writers is like, okay, you can have him be pissed at Barry, but they had him pissed at Barry through most of season two because Barry did the whole Flashpoint thing, and when he reset the timeline, there was, you know, ripples, and one of the ripples was his brother, who we met in the first season, died in a car accident off screen.
But didn't he die in the first season?
No, he was still alive.
Okay.
He got his hands... He's like a concert pianist, and his hands were incredibly fucked up by Captain Cold and his cold gun, to the point that his family, I don't think, was talking to Cisco very much, because his brother was, you know, the apple of his parents' eye, and, you know, why can't you be more like your brother? And it's like, yeah, Dad, I'm only working over here at, you know... major scientific R&D place. Yeah, didn't that place blow up and wreck the city? Yes, thanks, Dad. I'm still making more money than him. Didn't you blow up the city? Which is how they treat his relationship with his family. Thusly, why we haven't seen a lot of any of Team Flash's family outside of, like, Joe and Iris.
Well, we see Caitlin's mother and later father. The one thing I do have to say is I do give lots of praise to the episode where Caitlin goes sees her mother to get help with the Killer Frost thing. Because it felt like the person who wrote it understood the alienated feeling a parent and a child could have from a dysfunctional family. Yeah. That part was actually done extremely well. And the stuff with Caitlin's father, though, flatline bling.
You're not my real daughter. Your alternate personality is my real daughter.
Yeah, and they still haven't really explained that. I mean, having her dad be somewhat responsible for Caitlin becoming Killer Frost, that I can go with. But having him write out, I was like, oh, her dad's going to be the icicle. I was right. I don't feel like I've won anything.
Like, there are times where they do an episode that has a really good premise. One, like, almost like a bottle episode, but not really. Bottle episode is a term from TV writing where you basically have all the action take place on a very limited set with a very limited crew, low cost episode. Maybe not extremely low cost, but the one episode I consider a bottle episode in the writing and the fact that it was really stunned me was the one where Flash is stuck in Flash time because he has to stay accelerated because a nuke fucking went off and he's at the early stages of the nuke exploding and he has to figure out what to do.
Yeah, stuff like that.
I think the ending was a little bit of a cop-out, but the premise and like that sense of, like, I am living in a single second right now, and I have to figure this out because my 1 second will only last a couple of minutes.
Yeah. I will say Daniel Panabaker as Caitlin Snow, Killer Frost, another one of my favorite actors on The Flash. I do like what they've done with the dynamic between those two characters in the last couple of years, like how it's the more of a, I mean, it's not that she's evil, but, you know, to use it, it's a Jekyll and Hyde sort of thing where, you know, she can be Caitlin for a while and then she lets Killer Frost out and live her life. What they've done with her, Killer Frost, and, you know, getting her to be an actual character than just this evil personality in the back of Caitlin's head. I did love, being a longtime DC fanboy, I love how they had her, you know, you had Ronnie Raymond in the first season played by Robbie Amell. And, you know, that's a nod to the history. Like, they were never boyfriend, girlfriend in the comics, but I like that little twist and how, you know, they even had, you know, the Nuclear Man in there for a while before they killed Ronnie at the end of the first season. And then they had to reinvent an even more contrived way than they did in the comics to bring in Jax. And what's the dad from Alias? I can't remember the actor's name. Played Dr. Stein.
I know you're talking about the guy that they made a big joke about the Titanic in the.
Yeah. I love how the best thing about Flash is, more so than Arrow, is they brought in so many. Like, it was where we're going to bring in these characters and just from all over DC canon and history. I definitely think more so than Arrow. I mean, Arrow just leaned really heavy into, like, vigilante characters and stuff from the Batman.
And that's why Ben was saying it became a crossover bitch. And you said it wasn't. You just proved yourself that it's a fucking crossover bitch.
I said whore, but yes.
Whatever.
I didn't disagree with him on that, Red. I think the use of the word whore is a bit much. It makes more sense because of the idea of the multiverse and the Flash being more of a way lighter show than Arrow ever was in its history. Makes it, yeah, of course that should be where all the crossovers and all the new characters and where we're going to bring in more concepts. I mean, there was only so many concepts from Green Arrow before they just leaned heavy into the flashbacks going to the island and just flashbacks in general with any of the characters versus the Flash where, like, in the first episode, they set up one of my favorite Flash villains that didn't pay off until halfway through the season with Gorilla Goddamn Grodd. And I don't care what anyone says. It's a giant telepathic ape that can give Flash, quote-unquote, a run for his money. And it's the idea of... Sorry?
There was a time in DC that every single superhero had an ape villain.
Yes.
I have no problem with that.
Well, I think what Red's saying is that sometimes it drives him bananas.
Yeah. It's better that he makes a monkey of himself than I do.
Your puns are terrible.
I know. That. Well, may God have mercy on my soul.
That's just terrible. Yes.
let's just peel off in another direction, shall we?
Actually, let's make this a two-parter because we've already talked for about 80 minutes now.
Yeah, we got a whole bunch of DC shows to get to. Yes.
Speaking of Flash, I was going to bring up Ralph Dibny.
Yes. I think the actor was fantastic, honestly. I wasn't on board with him at first, but...
Yeah.
Same with me. I wasn't on board with him first. I was like, who's this fucking guy? He's not really playing Ralph. Then in that one episode where he finally, at the end, he goes, I smell mystery. And he wiggles his nose like, okay, you're Ralph.
Yes.
Yeah. And I physically, like, I didn't stand up and point, but I pointed at the... I was like, he did the thing. And, yeah, there's more to talk about here, folks. I definitely... There's a couple more things on Flash I want to bring up, but we can do that next time.
Yes. Anyways, right. Let's wrap this up. We'll hit more of this next week. This show's Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Writing.
Say goodnight.
So long.
We never do two-parters.